Welcome to Brainstorm by Us Against Alzheimer's, a patient-centered nonprofit organization. Your host, Meryl Comer, is a co-founder, 24-year caregiver, an Emmy Award-winning journalist, and the author of the New York Times bestseller, Slow Dancing with a Stranger.
This is Brainstorm, and I'm Meryl Comer. Our guest is Lisa Genova, acclaimed neuroscientist and author. Her New York Times bestseller, Still Alice, has been translated into 37 languages and adapted into an Academy Award-winning film. Her TED Talk, What You Can Do to Prevent Alzheimer's, has been viewed more than 5 million times. Today, we'll discuss the science of memory and the art of forgetting, based on her latest book, entitled Remember. Lisa, thank you for joining us. You know, I've watched you walk off the stage after a lecture and be swarmed by people worried about their own brain health. What do they ask and what do you tell them?
So I've been talking about Alzheimer's and using Still Alice as that vehicle for conversation about the subject that people are really reluctant to talk about for over a decade now. I would give this talk about Alzheimer's and then people would wait for me in the book signing line or corner me in the ladies' room like a confession to a priest. Say, okay, so I'm always walking into a room and I can't remember why I'm in there. Or I'm meant to go to the grocery store to pick up milk and I went to the grocery store and I came home with a bunch of things and no milk. I'm regularly forgetting names and, oh, what's the name of that actor in that film? The name of the film, the whole thing's gone. I can't remember to do anything later unless I write it down. I'm constantly losing my phone and my keys, and I can't remember where I parked my car the other day. I went to the mall. I shopped for just an hour. I came out. I couldn't remember. Did I park on level 3 or level 4? And so the expectation in this confession is that I'm going to diagnose them with Alzheimer's in this very conversation. And what I was telling people one at a time is all of what you've just told me, all of those moments of forgetting are totally normal. They are the price of owning a human brain. So people are super comfortable from the neck down, the cholesterol, the blood pressure, like I'm going to count my steps and pay attention to my heart health. Everybody's ignoring the neck up, the brain. We want people to pay attention to that. But what I was noticing is that everybody thinks all forgetting is Alzheimer's. And so if that's the case, that's way too scary, right? That's so overwhelming.
Lisa, as a writer, you have a unique talent of humanizing the science. So what do we remember and what do we forget?
We forget what is same old, same old. Our brains are not interested in what's ho-hum, boring, been there, done that, routine, habitual, same. Which is one of the reasons why I tell everyone this pandemic year is the most memorable year that you won't remember. Because we did the same things every day, right? We were trapped in the same house with the same people. We weren't going to concerts and dinner parties and theater and travel. Like, we don't remember what we do over and over again. We don't remember what we don't pay attention to. Said another way, you can only remember what you pay attention to. So I cannot form a consciously held memory that I can retrieve later if I don't pay attention to it. The reason things go missing, you can't find your glasses. Where did I put my glasses? You can't find your phone, your keys. Where did I park my car? Because you didn't pay attention to where you put them in the first place. So if I put my glasses down and don't take a split second moment to recognize, to notice I've placed my glasses here and I'm just texting or zipping off or talking or thinking of the next 12 things to do, my brain can't form a memory of where I put those in the first place. So then later when I'm crazed and I can't find them, it's not that I've forgotten anything, actually. My memory system was never even involved in the process, never gave my brain a chance. This is a symptom of distraction more than anything. So our brains are designed to remember what's meaningful, emotional, surprising, and new, and what we repeat over and over and over again. This is why we remember songs so well, because they overplay them on the radio. Forgetting is normal. It's normal to forget. We also don't forget what we plan to do later, Meryl. So this is called your prospective memory. So I think there's this expectation out there that memory is supposed to be perfect, and it's just not. We can have really good memories and we can supply all kinds of information, and there are ways that you can have a better memory, and we can support our memory health with things like the proper sleep and managing stress and diet and exercise, but it's also going to fail. no matter what you do in certain areas. So your memory for what you plan to do later, this is your to-do list for the future. It's fraught with forgetting, no matter how smart you are. So this is like, oh, I need to remember to pick up the dry cleaning, or oh, I need to remember to take my heart medication before bed, or oh, I need to remember to call my mom. Unless the right cue is available at the right time in the right place, you are going to forget it. So you write it down. This is just good practice. This doesn't mean your brain is weak. This doesn't mean that you have a bad memory or you're going to get Alzheimer's or you're cheating. Make your to-do list. Think about it this way. Airline pilots, they have checklists. They do not rely on their brains to remember to lower the wheels before landing the plane. So there's certain kinds of memory that are just as humans, we're going to forget. We're going to forget to do things later.
Is there a distinct way memories are collected and then stored in the brain?
Your memory is not a video camera. It's not recording a constant stream of every sight and sound and emotion and smell and feeling and information you're exposed to. Again, you can only capture and later retain and recall what you pay attention to.
Lisa, 50% of adults never get diagnosed, and some people have cognitive reserve. If the goal is to diagnose Alzheimer's disease early, what behaviors should families look for?
The more neural connections you have, the more you can dance around any problems that are present. So people who we call this cognitive reserve are able to sort of be facile. The main street roads, the main neural highways for getting to the information might be blocked. And so I've got to be a little creative and I got to dance around. So if I have Alzheimer's, I know that something's up, but I can maybe still come up with the right answer and kind of fake it for a while. How do you notice? That's a tough one, Meryl, because I think that, you know, nobody wants to see Alzheimer's in someone you love. So the Alzheimer's begins in the hippocampus. So that, what does that mean? That means this part of your brain that's responsible for taking all this new information and binding it into a neural circuit so that you can remember it later is compromised. Alzheimer's is starting its attack there. So this means I'm going to repeat myself because I don't remember that what I told you 5 minutes ago. Or I'm going to ask you questions about something you just told me 5 minutes ago because I don't remember it. I'm not going to remember yesterday so well because I wasn't able to make those long-term enduring memories.
Lisa, is much of what we remember inaccurate and incomplete, even though we seem to recall it in a very vivid manner?
You've got different kinds of memory, and it's processed and handled in your brain in different ways. So there's memory for stuff, information, what you know. This is what you learned in school. This is your biographical information, the stuff you fill out on forms, your name, your address, your birthday. This is the Wikipedia of your brain. That's stable over time. That's not inaccurate. So if I learn in third grade that 6 times 6 is 36, no matter how many times I repeat that information or how much I leave it alone, I'm still going to remember that 6 times 6 is 36 when I'm 80. There's your memory for how to do things. It's muscle memory. It doesn't live in your muscles. It lives in your brain. The choreography, the memory for the procedures of how to do stuff is your brain telling your muscles what to do. This is why we have the saying, it's just like riding a bike. Because once you learn these things, once I learn and memorize how to brush my teeth, how to ride a bike, how to drive a car, how to type, again, I could leave those things alone for years or whatever, like 40, 50, 70 years later, I'm still going to remember how to do those things, stable over time. Your memories for stuff that happened are not. They're funny. They're called episodic memories. And it turns out that every time I recall a memory for something that happened, it has the vulnerability and opportunity to change. We're not always conscious of this. So what can happen is I'm retelling a story of something that happened last week or 50 years ago. I've learned some new information since that experience happened, and I might add that in. Or I just happen to forget part of it. Oh, it was raining that day, but I forgot to mention the rain this time. So now it's not raining in the version of the story I tell. Now my beliefs are different than they were back then. I'm an adult. Something happened when I was 12. I've evolved some and I can reinterpret what happened. Here's the deal. When you reminisce, when you recall an event for something that happened, when you store it back in your brain, it overwrites the original. So it's like hitting save on Microsoft Word. The original memory is now gone. And what you're left with is this new 2.0 version. And so like the telephone game, you can drift further and further away from what actually happened. We all have collective shared episodic memories. They call them flashbulb memories, even though they're not photographic. So these are episodic memories for public events. So again, we remember what's meaningful, emotional, surprising. Where were you? Who were you with? What were you doing? What did you feel? What time of day was it when President Kennedy was shot and killed? When the space shuttle Challenger blew up? When the Twin Towers collapsed on 9/11? Right? So we all have these very vividly, confidently held memories of those events. And because they're vivid and feel so confident, we think they're accurate.
For risk reduction and brain health, there is diet, exercise, and sleep. Why is sleep so important for storing and making memories?
If I get a lousy night's sleep, I'm going to wake up the next day and my frontal lobe is going to be dragging itself to its day job. And one of its most important jobs is paying attention. And so you're right, you're tired. You're like, I'm sorry, I'm exhausted. What did you say? So if I'm not paying attention today, what am I not going to be able to do today? I'm not going to be able to make new memories, because the first essential ingredient in creating a new memory that could be consciously retrieved later is attention.
The global pandemic is entering its third year. What do we know about brain fog?
We've been relentlessly hammered with chronic stress. And when this happens, the feedback loop breaks. The shutoff valves break. The receptors in your brain that normally react to cortisol become desensitized and downregulated. And so you just keep dumping adrenaline and cortisol into your body and brain. It will interfere with your ability to create new memories. It will interfere with your ability to retrieve memories already made, and it will shrink the size of your hippocampus. This is bad for, impairs your ability to make memories today, and it makes your brain more susceptible to things like Alzheimer's and stroke in the future. But here's the good news. It's not irreversible. It is reversible. So we can restore the size of our hippocampus through things like exercise, yoga, meditation, mindfulness. Exercise, folks, it's like, here we go, ready? So it's a brisk daily walk for 30 minutes, four times a week. And a brisk walk means walk like you're in a hurry. And if you want to make that walk even more powerful for your brain, walk with a friend, because now you've just eliminated social isolation. So now you're exercising and you're with someone. Oh, and you're having a conversation that's never happened ever before. So your brain's paying attention. It's learning something new. Oh, that's really good for your brain too.
Thank you, Lisa, for ending on a high note. Our guest has been neuroscientist Lisa Genova. Her latest New York Times bestselling book, Remember, The Science of Memory and the Art of Forgetting. In closing, a reminder that Us Against Alzheimer's offers Brain Guide, a platform to help you or a loved one self-test your memory, and offers customized support resources. For more information, go to mybrainguide.org. I'm Meryl Comer. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Brainstorm.
Support for Brainstorm by Us Against Alzheimer's comes from Karen and Chris Siegel. Subscribe to Brainstorm through your favorite podcast platform and join us for new episodes on the first and third Tuesday of every month.